Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast or a computer with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's www.outfarpress.com. You can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Russia's Sputnik Radio, Radio Havana Cuba, and NHK World Radio Japan. We'll begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. German Chancellor Angela Merkel was awarded the Fulbright Prize for International Understanding. She spoke about the need to stand up to the rise of nationalism. The European Union demanded that Venezuelan President Maduro call for new elections within a week, or else they would recognize Juan Guaido as the leader. At the United Nations, many countries expressed their opinions about the U.S.-inspired attempted overthrow of the recently re-elected president. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel has stressed the need for greater international cooperation in standing up to the rise of populism. She made the remarks while being awarded the Fulbright Prize for International Understanding. Merkel joins a prestigious list of recipients, including Nelson Mandela, Bill Clinton, and Doctors Without Borders.
It was the first time the Fulbright Association awarded its Prize for International Understanding outside the US. And they chose the German capital and the German Chancellor. They selected Angela Merkel for what the association called her remarkable, compassionate leadership. During the ceremony, she was praised for her controversial decision during the 2015 refugee crisis to keep borders open.
Angela Merkel set the standard for how we in the rich world can and should treat our most desperate citizens. If other European nations had shared the burden, perhaps the backlash wouldn't have been so fierce.
In accepting the prize, Germany's first female chancellor spoke of the importance of the US-German partnership. Merkel said the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989 remains a symbol for German freedom and a united Europe, nearly 30 years later.
The reason all this was possible was because our American friends worked tirelessly for a free Europe and a strong Europe. And we Germans will never forget this.
Wir Deutschen werden das nicht vergessen.
Although she never named US President Donald Trump directly, the strains he's put on the transatlantic relationship were palpable during the ceremony. Merkel indirectly criticized Trump's America First approach to foreign policy.
For me, patriotism means thinking about your own interests in combination with others' interests. That's why I won't stop working towards strengthening multilateralism and promoting a rules-based global order.
It was not an evening for Merkel's many detractors, but an evening of praise for her legacy, especially her uncompromising stance against resurgent nationalism.
The European Union's foreign policy chief, Federica Mogherini, says Venezuela's leader, Nicolas Maduro, needs to announce new elections soon. She indicated the bloc will otherwise recognize the self-proclaimed interim president, Juan Guaido. In the last few minutes, Venezuela has rejected that call. The UN Security Council has been meeting in an emergency session to discuss the crisis. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo called on the world to support Venezuelan protesters. But Russia's UN ambassador says the world should stay out of the crisis. Moscow and Beijing have been among Maduro's chief backers. Washington has already recognized Juan Guaido as Venezuela's interim leader. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo addressed the Security Council and called on nations to choose a side in Venezuela's crisis. DW correspondent Oliver Salad attended the session of the Security Council in New York, from where he joins me now. Oliver, Mike Pompeo is calling on countries there to back Guaido. Which members of the council will recognize that call and which will not?
Well, there were several countries here that were not happy even discussing the issue of and the situation of Venezuela here at the Security Council. The most prominent one was Russia. Among them were also China, also South Africa, for instance. But the most aggressive position that we've heard here came by Russia. Russia really tried to narrow this down to an American problem here that only the United States are following and are trying to push for. That they're treating Latin America as sort of like their backyard where they could do whatever they want to do, and that they're just following their own geopolitical interests there, being interested for the oil of the country.
We have tape of the Venezuelan foreign minister who also addressed the Security Council. Let's play a little bit of what he had to say.
And we want to say that at this opportunity. In this case, the United States is not behind the coup d'etat. It is in advance. It's in the vanguard of the coup d'etat. It is dictating the orders, not only to the Venezuelan opposition, but also to the satellite governments in the region.
So, Oliver, a familiar narrative to many in Latin America, the Venezuelan representative accusing the United States of organizing a coup d'etat. Do any other council members, at least publicly, share that view?
Well, some do, and the overall argument is always that those are internal problems, that the sovereignty of Venezuela has to be respected. That's what we heard by the Russian ambassador, for instance, and by the Southern African ambassador as well. So basically we have a narrative here of this standpoint versus the other narrative of the Western countries that are trying to stress that there's a humanitarian tragedy, that millions of people had to flee the country. And so there's very much a standoff here at the Security Council of the United Nations.
Okay, thank you so much. That's DW's Oliver Salad.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com. Next, Russia Sputnik Radio. Former British MP George Galloway interviewed Ben Chaco, editor of the Morning Star. They discussed the Western media coverage of events in Venezuela as wall-to-wall propaganda, begun when Hugo Chavez was president. They talk about the rapid shift to right-wing politics in many Latin American nations, most notably Brazil, which Guaido fully supports. There is a possibility of a civil war with U.S. intervention like Syria and Vietnam. Does this conflict serve as a distraction from the investigation of the Trump administration, a new version of Wag the Dog? Why are the new leaders of the left in the U.S. not questioning what many in the world see as an attempted coup? Russia's Sputnik Radio.
Joining us now is Ben Chaco, editor of the only left-wing daily paper in Britain, The Morning Star. Ben, welcome on the Sputnik. Before they drop the bombs, they drop the narrative, of course. And the narrative against Venezuela has been the longest bombing run in history. How have you felt as the editor of the only newspaper which has been printing the other side of the Venezuela story about the fact that it's essentially wall-to-wall propaganda as a prelude to this attack? It's an aggression, isn't it?
It is an aggression, and it's been going on, as you say, for a very long time. The unrest in Venezuela, the opposition have never reconciled themselves to the Bolivarian Revolution. We know there was an attempted coup against Hugo Chavez 16 years ago, and there have been repeated violent uprisings against President Maduro, despite both of his elections having been given a clean bill of health by international observers. So we saw a huge wave of violence in 2014, a wave of violence in 2017 by right-wingers who set upon Chavez supporters, Chavistas, as Maduro supporters are also known, setting people alight, beating people up. People were being killed in quite large numbers. And yet, in the West, all of that was presented as government repression of protests, even though we have had videos of soldiers saying we're overthrowing the government. We had an attack on the Supreme Court with grenades by opposition figures. And when the government attempts to restore order in those circumstances, it's accused of repressing somehow legitimate protests. So there has been an absolute propaganda war to delegitimize the elected government of Venezuela.
Now, we expected something like this, but not quite this. They normally wait till they've killed the president or forced them to flee before recognizing someone else, or they recognize a defeated candidate in a disputed election. They have a problem with that because Jimmy Carter, no less, has repeatedly adjudicated Venezuelan elections as the best on the planet, but they normally wait. Here we have some guy in Caracas declaring himself the president, swearing himself in, and countries are actually recognizing this.
Well, I think we've seen a number of different tactics used by the right in Latin America when they haven't been able to get their way at the ballot box. So we've seen in Brazil the way that there was a constitutional coup against the Workers' Party president, Dilma Rousseff, and then an election in which the Workers' Party's most popular candidate was not allowed to stand, which has resulted in the far-right government we have in Brazil now. And in Ecuador, we had Lenin Moreno posing as the successor to Rafael Correa, yep, and then being elected on a platform to continue the revolution, but once in power, starting to reverse it. Although it is a surprise what's happening.
And in Argentina, of course, where the criminalization of the Kirchner era is well underway.
Combined with the persecution of indigenous rights activists in Argentina, which, again, we're starting to see in Brazil and in other Latin American countries. We saw reports that were leaked last year that the Trump administration had been in talks for quite some time with dissident officers in the Venezuelan army about the idea of a coup in Venezuela. But the military in Venezuela have remained loyal thus far to the revolution. And the experience, I suppose, of a long-running campaign of destabilization has meant that the Venezuelan government has tried to mobilize its very widespread popular support in the country against a coup. We know that people flocked to the streets and defeated the coup against Hugo Chavez. So I think that this tactic is evidence that they haven't been able to get rid of Maduro. They've tried to get the military to remove him. They've tried all sorts of dirty tricks, but they've failed. And that's why they've gone for this rather novel
approach. So who is he? Who is he? We know nothing of him.
Well, he's a member of the Popular Will Party, which presents itself as a centrist party, but I think it's very far from that. It's been implicated in a lot of the violent uprisings against the government, and it publicly welcomed the Bolsonaro election recently, saying that this was an opportunity for Brazil to intervene in Venezuela. We know that Bolsonaro has said that he will wipe out the Reds in Brazil. He has said the only problem with the Brazilian military dictatorship was that it failed to kill enough left-wingers. He sees himself as the leader of a real counter-revolution that will purge Latin America of socialists. I believe this is a continuation of what we've seen in other Latin American countries. They see Venezuela as the prize.
Colombia has a border with Venezuela. It's a candidate member of NATO. Brazil has applied to join NATO and said that Bolsonaro said he'd be ready to talk about American military bases in Brazil. So the internationalization of what's happening in Venezuela is a very real prospect. Meanwhile, as Gayatri said, Russia, China, Cuba, Bolivia, Mexico are all standing by the legal authorities. So it's not an exaggeration to say we could be looking at another Syria in Venezuela.
I don't think it is. I mean, we know that the US has a very close relationship with the Colombian government that has gone through a very difficult peace process, but still that large numbers of former left-wing paramilitaries and left-wing candidates in the elections in Colombia are being killed all the time, that the US is able to use Colombia potentially as a basis for attacking Venezuela. We know the Brazilian government has actually, Bolsonaro has said, he will happily harbor Venezuelan oppositionists, train them on Brazilian territory for an intervention against Venezuela. So I think it's really important for us on the left in Britain, for the Morning Star, to be emphasizing what a disaster these interventions have been wherever they have taken place, and that a war to remove the Venezuelan government is absolutely illegitimate, and we have to do everything we can to prevent it happening and to prevent Britain's government from being complicit in an American attempt to change the regime in Venezuela.
Given Trump's problems at home with these investigations getting ever closer to the Trump family syndicate, This is a kind of wag the dog war, isn't it? It's look over there. And so far, the liberals, centrists, even the left to some extent in Venezuela have not felt confident enough to respond. I haven't heard anything yet from Ocasio-Cortez or Bernie Sanders or anyone denouncing this. Have you?
I haven't either. And the left in the US Congress has often been rather weak on international questions such as this one. I wouldn't necessarily say it's simply an exercise in distraction. We know that the United States has been consistently hostile to the Venezuelan government, that President Obama declared it ludicrously declared Venezuela a security threat to the United States, and that Trump
Bush, Obama, and Trump, the policy has been more or less the same.
And it's been escalated by Bolton, of course, talking about this troika of tyranny and saying that he wants to see Venezuela.
Yes, of evil. Ben Chaco, editor of the wonderful Morning Star. Thanks for joining us.
That interview is by George Galloway on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. On to Radio Havana, Cuba. First, a viewpoint on the European support for the attempted overthrow of the leader of Venezuela. Historically, European nations enslaved the indigenous peoples of Latin America, claiming a divine right to steal their resources to enrich the development of Europe. Following centuries of struggle, Latin Americans won their sovereignty back. What right does the EU have to interfere in their politics? Thousands of Hondurans are protesting last year's elections. In Belgium and France, tens of thousands took to the street to demand that their governments take action on climate change. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Most of the nations of Latin America and the Caribbean reached their independence from their European metropolis in the 19th century and became sovereign countries, many of them at an enormous cost in the lives of their best sons and daughters, and at a huge economic cost to their respective peoples. This is not just an historic fact, but heroic exploits that drew a new social and political map of the world. Lamentably, many of the descendants of those who drowned in blood the struggle of the original nations of the area due to their military superiority and their belief in a divine right to conquer and control the new territories and their riches, continue proclaiming their alleged divine right to exterminate those who consider as their inferiors, but who have risen and are heroically struggling for their rights. Such seems to explain the arrogant position of the European Union with respect to Venezuela, a sovereign country whom they dared to give an ultimatum, as if that sovereign country was still a colony of the Spanish monarchy. In a declaration with an obnoxious stench as an imperial diktat, the members of that continental group, evidently inspired in the Spanish head of government, Pedro Sánchez, proclaimed that if Venezuela does not announce in the coming days new elections with proper guarantees, they would adopt additional measures, including the recognition of a new leader of Venezuela in accordance with Article 233 of the Venezuelan Constitution. They are not only ignoring history, but they are also showing their total ignorance of the Venezuelan legislation and national reality. This Article 233 of the Venezuelan Constitution states that in case of the absence of the Venezuelan head of state from his post due to death, incapacity, resignation, or being expelled, the president of the National Assembly will be called to organize new elections. Luckily, Nicolas Maduro enjoys perfect health, has not resigned, nor has been demoted from his job, to which he was elected by 57% of the voters in a free, transparent, democratic election held in 2018. That election was carefully monitored by many foreigners, including scores of European observers who attested to the quality, transparency, and accuracy of the process. The European Union does not have any right to interfere in the internal affairs of any country of Latin America and the Caribbean. In fact, the European Union should ask us for forgiveness for the massacres and genocide conducted against the native peoples of our hemisphere, who were brutally murdered or turned into slaves in their own land and deprived from their enormous resources, which financed the welfare and development of Europe at the expense of the lives of millions of America's native inhabitants. The principles of the French Revolution that for many years illuminated the world, which are freedom, equality, and fraternity, have fallen into a bottomless pit. We would like to recall then liberté, égalité, et fraternité. And this, friends, has been Radio Havana Cuba's editorial comment for today. In Havana, I am Alberto de Perez.
Thousands of people in Honduras block roads in different areas of the country in what have been dubbed the Red Vest protests, a year after the inauguration of President Juan Orlando Hernández. Groups of supporters from the Freedom and Refoundation Party, organized by former President Manuel Zelaya, took to the streets a year after Hernández took office in protest of electoral fraud, this according to opponents. However, what began as a day of peaceful protest turned into a confrontation between demonstrators and members of the National Police, who fired tear gas at the crowds in a bid to repress the demonstrations. The main ramps to different highway arteries were cordoned off by the military while demonstrators were attacked. Sources among the protesters denounced the intimidation tactics used by police throughout the day.
Tens of thousands of people marched across France and in Belgium to protest the lack of state action to halt climate change. Organizers said more than 80,000 people demonstrated in French towns and cities, while police in Brussels said 70,000 turned out in the Belgian capital. Gathered at the French capital's Place de la République Square, the demonstrators, many of whom donned yellow high-visibility vests in support of the Yellow Vest movement, carried signs in support of the environmental movement. Demonstrators said the rally established a link between climate change associations and the Yellow Vests, adding that the government should penalize companies that are considered big polluters before imposing taxes that take a toll on the working class. Many said France should set an example on an international level in the fight against climate change.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's web stream worked well this week at their website, radiohc.cu, but their podcast links were up there, but they don't work. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 5 p.m. to 11 at either 6060, 6000, and possibly 9535. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or can make a donation for production costs of this freely distributed program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162. Willits, California, 95490. The only funding this program receives is from donations. Please help me continue this show if you can, like a listener in Whale Gulch, California did this week. We will conclude with NHK Japan. China has condemned the U.S. for filing criminal charges against Huawei Technology and its CFO. The U.S. has gathered forces from 9 African nations for military exercises in East Africa. Lawyers in New York have reenacted the legal battle of a second-generation Japanese-American who challenged the constitutionality of U.S. internment policy during World War II. NHK Japan.
China has condemned the United States for filing criminal charges against Huawei Technologies and its chief financial officer. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Gan Shuang reacted sharply in remarks released on Tuesday. Gan said the U.S. has been using its power to tarnish and crack down on specific Chinese companies in an attempt to strangle their lawful and legitimate operations. He added that China strongly urges the U.S. to stop its unreasonable bashing of Chinese companies, including Huawei. Gan urged the U.S. to immediately withdraw its arrest warrant for Meng and refrain from making a formal extradition request.
The United States and nine African nations have begun joint military exercises in East Africa to fight growing terrorism by Islamic extremists. The two-week exercises began on Monday in the Eastern African nation of Djibouti. Forces from Somalia, Kenya, and seven other African countries are taking part. The drills come after 21 people were killed in an attack by an armed group earlier this month in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. At a ceremony marking the start of the U.S.-led exercises, a U.S. Africa Command officer emphasized the importance of containing the movement of terrorists and weapons at sea. Djibouti is an important location for sea lanes and hosts the only U.S. military base in the African continent. China began building its first overseas base in Djibouti in 2017. The joint exercises are apparently designed to impress China with the U.S. military presence in the region.
Lawyers in New York have reenacted the legal battle of a second-generation Japanese-American who challenged the constitutionality of the U.S. internment policy during World War II. After Japan's attack on the U.S. naval base at Pearl Harbor, President Franklin Roosevelt signed an executive order in 1942 that sent about 120,000 Japanese-Americans to internment camps. The Asian American Bar Association of New York held the event honoring Fred Korematsu on Wednesday, which would have been his 100th birthday. Korematsu was arrested for refusing to go to an internment camp. He argued that the order amounted to racial discrimination in violation of the Constitution, but the Supreme Court upheld his conviction in 1944. It was overturned some 40 years later. The reenactment depicts Korematsu telling prosecutors that it's wrong to force innocent citizens into a camp just because they are Japanese Americans. There are growing calls for Americans to study the history of the internment at a time when President Donald Trump is promoting a tough immigration policy. A fourth-generation Japanese-American man in the audience said he wants people to learn about Korematsu and his fight for justice now more than ever. The Bar Association's executive director, Yang Chen, says similar mistakes are still being repeated in the United States. He said he hopes people will learn from Korematsu's trial to create a better situation.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan, heard from 9 to 9:30 p.m. at 6155-7410 or 9860, or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcast, get a global perspective. You could use a shortwave radio at home. It's simpler than you might think, though electronic devices have made it much more difficult. However, if you use the internet, listening globally is even easier and noise-free. See the links at this program's website. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's www.outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find internet links for international broadcasters. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website, along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which is now in its 22nd year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. This shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.